So here we are again.
I've had
chin wag
feedback too. Yay, another chin wag. How's your week been, Marcus? What have you been up to?
Oh, what I've been up to? Well, I'm just on a I'm on day two of a 10-day cleanse. So yeah, feeling it, really feeling it today. Woke up, feel like I've been on a 2-week bender. of alcohol and, you know, up all night, which I haven't been. But I've done it before. I haven't done one for a while. So probably a good 3 years, actually. I was thinking about it today. So felt, you know, spring, well, it's coming into summer now. It's getting warmer. Thought it's time to do it. But you do these things and then you get these dips during the day. Because tea, I love tea. Tea is my thing. I love tea. So not to drink tea, even for 24 hours, it's like my body's going, oh my God.
Like, are you allowed herbal teas?
You're allowed herbal teas, yeah. Okay. Yeah.
It's just not the same.
It's not the same, but it's something. it's interesting though. What I've noticed is just this today, this morning, just getting little signs of clarity and calmness and peace, which is great just in the day, you know, just in this morning. So I think it's a great thing to do. And I know I've done it before. And by the time I remember getting to like day 5 or 6, you could just carry on. I mean, it's just great. You know, you get this equilibrium. I know it's not for everybody, but I always feel so good doing it. I feel so good.
I know when I stop drinking coffee, I definitely have my moods and everything levels out too. But I really love coffee. It's my problem.
I love tea. I love tea. I love it. It's my thing. I've been drinking it since the age of 7. You know,
I've been drinking coffee since the age of 5. You know, in South Africa, my kids
5.
Love, we literally drank coffee from when we were infants, and I would have a coffee as a child before I went to bed. It was just a thing.
Before you went to bed.
Yeah, it was just, we just had coffee for breakfast, coffee after school, coffee all day. It's just been a thing.
Yeah.
Which actually reminds me, keep going.
No, I'm going to say, so it's interesting, isn't it, what we get used to, because it's like, so I've been drinking tea since I was 7. I'm from Manchester, or, you know, up north. That's what you do. You drink tea. And it's not just the physical, probably addiction to tea or coffee, is it? It's the emotional connection to it as well. For me, especially in my family, we put the kettle on. As soon as you go to somebody's house, put the kettle on. Let's have a cup of tea.
It is. It's really the ritual. And it's actually, when you've got any sort of craving, doesn't matter what it is, there's always something deeper about why we're craving that, right? Like, you know, for some people, just going to the cafe and getting their cappuccino or their latte, it makes them feel like an adult. It makes, I don't know, when it comes to like any sort of addiction, it's good looking at the reasons behind that. Which I just have to tell you, this week,
go on.
Had a client who drank 7 cups of coffee a day for years. Wow. I gave her coffee at 200 C daily. And I said, listen, we'll probably get you cutting down maybe 2 or 3 coffees with this remedy if we're lucky. She emailed me 3 weeks later saying she hasn't touched coffee after 3 weeks. If she drinks it now, she feels sick. Had a client yesterday, 20 years of pot smoking daily. Cannabis sativa 200 C daily after 3 weeks. She's now had 8 days for the first time in 20 years of no pot.
Wow, amazing.
I know.
Let's give an amen for homeopathy on a Wednesday morning. It's great. Well, absolutely. Yeah. I mean, what you're saying, I need to take tea and potency. I think that's
maybe Tia. I've never prescribed that. Well, we did learn about it in college, Tia, but I don't know how you pronounce it, but
Well, Miranda Melissa Aslam wrote a great book. You know, if you've ever read it,
the homeopathic tea party.
Yes, the Mad Hatter's tea party. Yeah,
Mad Hatter's tea party. Yeah, it's got coffee and tea, tea. Sakaram.
Sakaram. Yeah,
probably.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I've never read it.
Yeah, it's really good. Really good. I'd recommend it to read it.
I want to get her hormones book, because I know Hillary refers to that one as well.
Is that the menopause one?
I think it's, I don't know. I don't know some of Hillary's CHE lecture, the stuff that she takes on folliculinum. A lot of that comes from Melissa Aslam's book, but I don't know.
That's right. Yeah, I think it's the menopause book. I think she refers to.
Okay. Speaking of books,
yes.
It's always a happy day in a homeopath's life when you have books delivered.
I got three books today.
3 new ones.
Yes.
Well, they're actually secondhand because I bought them at the Aurum Project here in Australia.
Is that a Mike Andrews book on autism, the first one?
It is. I have not read this one.
Yeah. Yeah, is- very good. I'd highly recommend that with Mike Andrews' book. Very, very good.
And Stramonium, because I interviewed Paul Herskew last week.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah.
And it was very interesting because I posted in various Facebook groups saying, these are my guests for the week. What questions do you want to ask? And the only thing all the homeopaths asked is for me to ask him about his stance on the COVID vaccination, which he was very vocal about. But he was actually really great. He said, he'll come back for another episode and we'll discuss all things COVID. And yeah, which is great. I'm excited to have him back. But I have never heard of this cycles and segments. And it really makes a lot of sense from the tiny little bit that I read on his website and the tiny bit. I just got it today. I just had a squiz through here. So I'm excited about that. And Nancy Herrick's book, Animal Mind, Human Voices. I've heard.
Oh, wow. No, so I haven't heard about that.
There's so much about it. So I'm really excited to dig into this one.
And what's that about? Just read the back. What's it?
Proving of 8 new animal remedies.
Okay.
So it's got rat, elephant, lion, dolphin, wolf, dinosaur, butterfly, and horse, which is really cool because I didn't know it had more butterfly stuff in here.
Mm.
Very exciting because I've had a bit of a butterfly week. I had an email yesterday from a client saying that her son's had bedwetting. We've had two consults. No luck with a bedwetting, still going. He's 6 years old. She came up for a third consult and I prescribed him Monarch Butterfly.
Okay.
And within a couple of doses, bedwetting stopped. That was at the start of the year. She emailed me and she said, he's no more bedwetting. I said, don't tell me that because you're going to jinx me. Wait a few months. If it's still no bedwetting, email me back. Yeah. She emailed me yesterday saying, still no bedwetting. You're allowed to claim it. So I will. Yes.
Fantastic. No, that's great. Fantastic. I mean, bedwetting, my always go-to remedy often, especially in kids, is Equisetum, giving it in low potency or tincture. But also the other thing is I always ask what's going on within the family dynamic. And I've often, you've probably seen this as well, that often kids will do what the parents aren't expressing. And I found that really useful to find out, to get to if there's some kind of disharmony within the house or within the household, within the family, the kids are expressing it. And I remember that from a case I had many, many years ago when I first started practicing, where this mother contacted me and could I help her child who was four, who was having real problems swallowing. And so she'd gone to the doctors, had different investigations. They couldn't find anything wrong with her. And so I said, yeah, bring her in. And I bring her in. And she came in. I always remember this. I opened the clinic door and she came in and so did. And then there was a guy came behind. So I presume obviously it was the father. And they came in, they sat in the room and the father took his chair and sat at the back of the room, like almost in the corner. And the mother sat with me with the child. And so I started the case. I thought, okay, there's something. I could feel there's a bit of tension in the room here. And so I started talking, asking about the case, about the child, taking the case. And when did it all start? All those things that we started, 6 months ago. Was anything going on, in her life 6 months ago? And the mother suddenly just stopped dead and said, well, you better ask him. And it was like, okay.
Awkward.
And at that point, awkward, just a bit. The tension, you could cut it with a knife. And the guy just put his chair, he got up, put his chair down and just walked out. Anyway, what I found out from the mother was that he'd had an affair with her best friend. Mm. And it all been found out. And I mean, she was so angry. She was so angry and holding it in. And so I gave the child Ignatia.
Beautiful.
Because that lump of the throat, that, globulus hystericus. And I said to the mother, I think you need to book in to see me. I was trying to explain that sometimes children will do what's not being expressed within the family, and it worked within 48 hours. Child was eating again. So like you said, it's getting to that. Often getting to what's behind it, as you said before about that causation, it can be so crucial. Or as Robin Murphy used to say, etiology over symptomatology. If you can find a clear etiology, sometimes you can just ignore the symptomatology, just go straight to it.
Maybe explain etiology for our new listeners or our new students, who, if they haven't come
across that before. Sure, etiology is the causation. So you can take cases, we see this a lot in homeopathy, where people will come in and with certain symptoms, and we'll take the symptomatology down. What makes it better? What makes it worse? What does it feel like? for example, like arthritis, you could take the case and you're asking them what makes it better, what makes it worse, better for heat, you know, worse for movement, better continued motion. Sensation feels really stiffness, especially in the morning. And then the next question we ask is, well, when did it start? And they can say, well, it started 4 years ago. And the next question the homeopath always asks is, what was happening in life 4 years ago? Now, sometimes people have never, ever been asked that question. They may see many doctors, many different specialists, but nobody's ever really asked them or explored what was going on before it started. Mm-hmm. And often people say, they'll tell you straight away, spontaneously, or they'll say, well, anything going on emotionally for you? Anything going on? Oh, yeah, that's when my mother died. Mm-hmm. And how do you feel about it now? It feels like it was yesterday. Mm-hmm. I've never got over it. Mm-hmm. This is very similar to a case I had this week. I always use that analogy, and I think people are probably sick of me saying this, the car dashboard, if the oil light is like the symptoms, if the oil light's flashing, it means there's something wrong in the engine. But if you just take the bulb out or just suppress the symptoms, there's still a problem in the engine. The car's going to break down 2 or 3 miles down the road. So the homeopath goes into the engine and fixes it, and the light goes off by itself. Mm. Don't know that explains it.
I use that same analogy, and I say to my clients, you know, when your petrol light comes up on your dashboard, it means that your car needs petrol. You can like keep on going and going, but eventually your car's going to stop. Like what we're doing with homeopathy is putting petrol in your car so you can go instead of just ignoring that light. I'm just like sitting here because this conversation can go anywhere. That's the thing with chin wags. We could take this any direction. You don't know where this is going to go. Maybe we should do like a live interactive thing, like you versus Wild with Bear Grylls, your buddy, the listeners can choose, you know, do you want us to go this direction or do you want us to go this direction?
Point this way, point right, point left. But I think but that's what's great about these open conversations, isn't it? Yeah. Because we need to talk, we need to explain with what we do or our thought processes and share, because we're a community, and the more that we can share, sometimes that'll spark a little insight in your mind or my mind, or and like I said, take you and remind you of things that you've done, cases and all different things
I've got like 50 things going on in my head at the moment. You know, one of them was I was thinking we could take this direction of the talk in the direction of talking about reasons behind bedwetting. Because one of them, you know, that's a huge one that's often overlooked is constipation. It's actually a big one. There's so many, obviously sexual abuse is a big one. There's so many things, and all of that's going to depend on which remedy you give, you know. Often the remedy I actually use for that often is the remedy hypothalamus, which I also learned from Hilary Dorian's endocrine lecture on CHE. Yeah. The hypothalamus, I cannot talk tonight, is obviously the master.
Too much coffee. Going to cut down the coffee.
not enough coffee today. So it's sending that, you know, that signal in the bladder saying, okay, you know, it's full, it's stretched, you need to go to the toilet. So that message isn't coming through. So hypothalamus often works. Something that I have not gotten potency that I was going to investigate this week because I've got another bedwetting case is actually the remedy antidiuretic hormone. I don't know if we've got that in potency because if we do, potentially be a really good one as well. So hypothalamus is a biggie that I've used too. Just if I suspect that maybe those signals are not getting sent properly, then I'll give that remedy in potency. That often. That can work.
Yeah. We're talking about bedwetting, aren't we?
Bedwetting.
And also I think it's like anything. When we're prescribing, it's just keeping it simple. And so you go for the most obvious first, don't you? You go for those totality of symptoms. Mm-hmm. And then you can work. If that doesn't work, well, why is it not working? And for example, like I said, the hormonal can be out, the thyroid can be out, things can be out. And so you need to adjust that with the remedies. Or with the sarco, should I say. So that's why I always emphasize you have to have tools in your toolbox. Mm. One spanner doesn't fit all nuts. You need to know these different ways of prescribing to get into a case. And for me, I'm open, I'm sure, and I know you're the same, Eugenie, that you don't care what people do as long as it works. And then you want to find out, because some people will listen and say, what a butterfly remedy, what's all that about? But actually, you just got to try it. And if it works, it works. And I want to look, because I want to help my clients and patients as much as possible. So, you know, you've got to learn, well, be open to learning new ways of prescribing. And talking about bedwetting as well in the Chinese medicine thing, obviously, I find this is really important in practice. is linking it to the Chinese medicine or the emotional thing of each organ. Louise Hay's book, How to Heal Your Body. I mean, it's a very old book now, but it's still...
Secret Language of the Body is my new favorite. Secret Language of the Body.
You mentioned that before. Yeah.
Love it. Have you got it there? No, I don't. Who's at the clinic. So half my books are here, half's at the clinic.
Yeah.
I can't remember the author right now.
But just knowing that that connection of that emotion. So like I said, kidneys is often fear, isn't it? When there's two organs involved, like lungs, kidneys, then it's often can be relationships as well. Liver, anger, heart. Mm. What's the heart? Depression. People with in the heart, can't they? Emotion, depression, all those sort of things. So I think it's just another way in, isn't it, to understanding the body.
Absolutely. The author is Inna Segal, I-N-N-A, and the surname is S-E-G-A-L. Another bedwetting case, actually. It's been going on for we've tried all the obvious things, and I was like pulling my hair out. But then the mum was really onto it. I feel like this could be the one. She said that this 5-year-old, 6-year-old girl is so determined to be out of nappies. So she went to bed without it. But then what the mum did is she woke her several times a night. Oh no, she did still have a diaper. That's right. But she woke her, you know, the child go to bed at 7. So the mum would wake her at 10 and then she'd set her alarm, wake again at 1 and then wake again at 4. And then in the morning, you know, when she wakes up, so it's just normal time. But every single time the diaper was wet. So I found one rubric in my radar opus that I literally couldn't live without. And the rubric was wet the bed several times a night or 4 times a night or something like that. And there was only one remedy in there, Cobaltum Metallicum. So I am intrigued. And this mum is clever because if we go into the repertory, we can go involuntary urination midnight before or midnight after or early morning hours or between 2 or 3 a.m. So you can, if you know when the bedwetting is happening, you can, you know, get the remedies in that rubric. So this was great that the mum did this investigative work because then we knew, okay, this girl's actually literally wetting the bed the entire night.
Yeah.
And it left us with one remedy as opposed to a rubric with 500 remedies, which is really good.
Yeah, exactly. And I think for case taking, and that's why we've got to be, I would say we're like a detective. We've got to be meticulous in that getting those modalities, getting those sensations, get like time modalities, because the more information we can get, the more we can make a judgment of what remedy to give. And so I think it's back to, actually, I was talking about this yesterday with some students about acute prescribing. That's why we should all really, really, I don't care how long you've been practicing for, really, you know, double down on acute prescribing because that to me is fundamental for chronic case taking, getting all that information that you need. Because like I said, otherwise, if it's too broad, you're dealing with 500 remedies.
Yeah.
Don't you? You know, and certainly, but you need those things to narrow down those modalities to narrow down to the you know, select remedies. So,
well, we're really heading into autumn here now. So all the cough cases are starting like every year, April, my stomach just sinks because, you know, coughs are so tricky to treat. And I've threatened to write a book on coughs for years now. I even had like a weekend away once. This is a funny story. It was actually at this monastery here. But there's all these stories of all these ghosts that are there. And I didn't realize when I booked that they had put me literally in a paddock with sheep kilometers away from the main house. And
really?
I thought I'd be brave. But that night, oh my God, I was so scared. I didn't sleep at all. So my book did not happen. I wrote a few paragraphs. Also, I forgot my charger. So my laptop died after a couple of hours. So I think this cough book is not going to happen. But coughs like this time of year, it's all coughs in my closed Facebook group. We decided to get the... starting to get the cough ones, and you got to be on the ball with your prescribing.
Definitely.
With the acutes.
You do. And I think, like I said, coughs, I think coughs often can be the most challenging to deal with. And it's just that differentiation again, isn't it? Between wet cough, dry cough, all those, I'm still go back to that those modality sensations, you know, the whole clams thing is so crucial in that. But also sometimes if that doesn't indicate the remedies don't act, then you may need a miasmatic, you know, remedy to prescribe.
And
also bowel nosodes. Bowel nosodes as well. Yeah. I mean, people forget that, you know, really good for coughs. So yeah, I think it's, but often the coughs, treating things like those acutes gets people interested into homeopathy, doesn't it? So I think it's crucial that we do know that. Check out, I did a coughs thing on YouTube.
I've seen it. It was really good. Yeah. You had about six or seven or eight remedies on it. Yeah, I saw that.
Normally your remedy will be in those. But there is something somewhere. I'm sure somebody did it. I don't know who did it. I know whether it's in India.
Did
different types of cough.
Yes, where he's actually coughing the different coughs.
Yes.
So if you go on YouTube and you type in Saptarshi Banerjee, that's Banerjee. He's got, it's a two-part series. I don't know if you know this, but he also has a series on there of different stutters where he actually stutters all the different stutters and different cries. So he does all the different cries that babies make so that you can identify it from the cry. So, I mean, but he's a fifth generation homeopath, to be fair. He's also been on the podcast, for people to interview for Spotlight. He would be amazing.
Absolutely amazing. Thank you. It's always good, especially like I said, because aren't they based down in, was it Kolkata now? The new name.
I don't know if it's Kolkata or Mumbai or where he is, but he travels so much. If you look on his Instagram, he's always in Greece or, you know, somewhere in Europe.
But their clinics treat thousands of people a day, don't they? Those clinics. Yeah. You know, I mean, that sort of level of experience is you just can't get that level of experience. And it's a different way of prescribing. You have to be prescribed differently than what we often, I think, often do in the West, where we take our cases and things like that. You haven't got the time there to do that.
He was repatrizing for his dad from the age of 12. His dad would give him cases and he would sit and repatrize it for him.
Wow. Amazing, isn't it? Amazing. Yeah. Well, you can't get, I mean, that's just incredible, isn't it?
No, that's...
And in a way, it's a shame we don't really have that apprenticeship sort of system, you know, because I think that would be great. Because a lot of the time, especially, I don't know what it's like in Australia, but in the UK, often osteopaths will train and then they'll join a clinic and they'll be like an apprentice, you know? And I think that's it's a great way to learn. It's a great way.
Is that what you have in the UK? Do you have that?
Osteopaths? Yeah, I think osteopaths do that. Osteopaths. Not homeopaths. I'm saying it'd be great for homeopaths that you go and join a clinic. And, you know, because when you're with people who have I remember this as a student, I used to sit in with very experienced homeopaths, and you learn so much. Yeah. You learn so much from the way, it's a bit like our master practitioner program with Hillary. Mm. You know, what people will see is, I mean, she's done it for 40 years, is that the ability to just cut through and simplify very, very complicated, cases and situations. So I think if anybody's just starting out or even training as a homeopath, go and try to sit in with homeopaths, especially experienced homeopaths, because it's invaluable. That's invaluable, that experience. I can still remember it now.
I had Joe Rosenquist for a mentor with my first few cases after I graduated, which was great. It was some tricky cases. And then, you know, Hillary mentored me on about a dozen or so cases a couple of years ago, which was amazing. Just having that experience to draw from is really invaluable, especially when you're starting out. I was just going at my own that first little bit. And I think so many homeopaths do, but I hope that's shifting, because, you know, if I look at Ren, who's got her team of, you know, a dozen odd homeopaths, and Angelica Lemke's got a team of homeopaths, and Sarah Valentini and Rita Cara Robinson, I've got my team of homeopaths. So I hope that that's the culture where we're going towards, where we're working together as teams. I think it's really
definitely. I mean, that's what we did. I mean, back in sort of the mid 90s, a lot of us came together as a group practice, and it was great. You know, I mean, so there was a homeopath available every day of the week. We had acute clinics, people could drop in for acutes or telephone, and there'd be a homeopath that was covering that clinic. So we all covered each other. If we went away, then they would cover you. So we had like, what do you call it? A
locum.
What do you call it? Locum service. So, and people really felt that they were really looked after, because you had a team. And because how many times I hear this from people? I'm in a crisis. Oh, my homeopath's gone away. I can't, when they're back, only 3 weeks. Well, what was anything set up for? No. They just told me just to wait until I got back. And that's crazy. You need that support.
Mm. Well, we've got, you know, homeopathy 24/7 has been great. There's also homeopathy help now, which is Denise Strages and Al Gray that set that up as well. But we literally just had this because one of the homeopaths on our team went to Vietnam, and it was great because a couple of the clients had aggravations. They just came straight to me. I just sorted them out, until she came back. Today I had an acute call that I couldn't take, and we've got our WhatsApp group with my team of homeopaths on, and I just said, this client of mine needs something. Who can help her? Somebody stuck up their hand. So, you know, like, it's wonderful. Really, really cool.
Yeah. Well, again, it's just working together. It's and it's fun. You know, I mean, that was a shock for me when I qualified. It's like working by myself. I thought, is this it? Me sat in a room, clients coming in and out all day, and that was it. I wanted to be part of a community. I wanted to be feel part of a team or...
Yeah,
but I just wanted to connect with people. So I totally think it's the way forward. And like I said, the more we do it, the more not only patients and clients benefit, but also homeopathy benefits, I think.
Definitely. I was wondering if I should check with the others first, but speaking of getting together, I got this brainstorm because I'm actually going to Bali with a family in June this year. And so in my close Facebook group, I just warned everyone. I said, I'm going to Bali, you know, just so you know, if you want to book a consultation, you have to do it ahead. And then somebody said, oh, we should have a homeopathic conference in Bali. Now, I'm pretty sure I'm undiagnosed ADHD. just all these reels I see them people saying they have like a gazillion ideas in their head. I'm like, I'm resonating with way too many of these things. But it's I reckon it's a superpower personally. But somebody said, well, we should have a homeopathic conference in Bali. And I'm like, that's a brilliant idea. So for our listeners, reserve this date. Marcus put up his hand that he's going to be on the organizing committee. We're thinking June, July, because that's when the weather is best. Yeah. Bali 2024. It's going to be a great time.
Absolutely. Be there. Come on.
Be there.
It's going to be a party.
It's going to be amazing.
We're going to base it around the full moon, whenever the full moon is.
Oh, okay, now you're talking. Hilary Dorian said she'll be there. She just asked that we have yoga daily.
Yeah, yeah.
But there will be yoga. Yeah. There will be. And Sarah Valentini or somebody, I think it was her, said we should triturate a Balinese substance. So when I go next month, I'm going to try and connect with Bali's only homeopath, Chok.
Yeah, there's only one homeopath, is there?
As far as I know, there's only the one. So I'm going to try and connect with him, see if he can recommend a substance. Somebody asked whether frangipani had been triturated yet. And I was like, I don't know, but that would be a good one.
And I thought I also connect with is Tony Pinkus because he used to live in Bali. So I'll connect with him.
Please.
And I'll ask him as well. We'll talk with him.
I've been trying to get him on the podcast. I'll have to go just nudge him. He did say yes, but then I just got a bit busy, so I have to connect with him again. But that would be really cool. So then I thought we could do that as like an add-on towards the end. So maybe have like a three or four or whatever day conference. And then whoever wants to stay behind for the trituration over a 2-day period.
So
we can leave the substance overnight, come back and, you know, continue triturating the next day.
Fantastic.
Hey, fun. So watch this space, guys. You heard it here
first. Watch this space.
We haven't even had our first meeting yet, but the committee.
Oh, it's going to happen. It's going to happen.
We're going to make it happen.
It's going to happen. Got to put the vibe out there. No, that'd be really, really great.
Yeah.
Really great. And it'd be nice just to see everybody in a nice, beautiful location, wouldn't it?
Yeah, definitely. Just for everyone to come together. I just think it's time for all of us. And I know that that's the collective feeling for many of us that we want to get together. You know, power and numbers, share ideas, share resources.
Totally. We're going to have an event because it's our 25th anniversary here at CHE. So later in the year, we'll announce that we're going to have a big get together here in the UK. So we'll invite people can come all over the world, come to this event, what we're planning. So I'll let you know more details.
What is it you're celebrating?
25 years of CHE. We founded CHE 25 years ago, 1998. It was our 25th anniversary. So quarter of a century, Eugenie. Where does the time go?
That is impressive. That sounds really cool. So did you say end of this year or end of next year?
End of this year. Around October time, around October time we're looking.
Okay.
So we've got some plans. So we'll let you know what happens. And we'll invite all the CHE tribe, all the CHE community, wherever you may be in the world, to come to the UK.
That would be so cool. I guess if people just subscribe to your newsletter, that's probably the best way to get information, hey?
And just go to the CHE Homeopathy website, chehomeopathy.com. And if you haven't already, you know, register for the free home prescriber course by Hilary Dorian, because it's so phenomenal. You know, it's whether, again, you've been practicing for a long time or you're just starting out, check out that Hilary's home prescriber course. It's free on the website. You just register. And it's a really great way.
It's good. I've watched that course because I wanted to see what hers is all about. But I just listened. If she was talking about literally anything, I don't know. I'm trying to think of what could be the most boring. If she was talking about golf, sorry to all the golf lovers. Yeah. I would listen to whatever it is she has to say because she's this next.
I know she's just a fountain of experience and clinical experience and knowledge and. Yeah, it's
and she's had her first grandbaby now.
Yeah, she's a grandma now. Yeah, she's a grandma. Oh, so enjoying being a grandma. Yeah. And so she's really, yeah, big celebration there going on. Yeah. Big celebration going on.
I wanted to pick your brains today, specifically about a couple of different things. I keep getting asked by my clients, what is my constitutional remedy? And I don't, you know, the universe likes to send me things in batches. So just the last week has been a batch of what is my constitutional remedy? And I noticed that question triggers me. And then every time I notice triggers in myself, I sit with, why is it that this thing is triggering me? And I don't know, if a client asks you, what is your constitutional remedy? What would you answer? Because I don't personally feel it's that easy. Like, okay, this is usually, I should caveat with or backspace it with, these are usually clients that see me once or twice. They'll want to know their constitutional remedy. And I'll say to them, look, if you were a child, an unvaccinated, unmedicated child that came to see me, I could probably tell you a constitutional picture straight off the bat. But if you're an adult who's been on lots of antidepressants, that have had lots of vaccination, lots of issues, lots of traumas, it's really hard to see, to know if what I'm seeing in front of me is you or just a whole bunch of suppression and things on top of that. So usually it's a bit of a journey. We uncover a few things. And your constitutional remedy is whatever is coming up in the consult today, wherever state you're at the moment, is your constitutional remedy for now. That might change as we uncover layers of trauma. And especially if there's been very suppressive things, like people that have been on antidepressants for 20 years, how could you possibly know their constitutional remedy? They don't even know who they, if you ask them questions, well, what were you like before the antidepressants? They can't even answer that to you, you know, or if you, so I don't know, Marcus, I'll leave that question to you.
Yeah, well, I think it's a really interesting question. And I think, I try to see things as simply as possible. And I think it's the word. I think the word means different things to different people in homeopathy. And I said it's a little bit confusing. Mm. So, for example, if you look at Isiaga and his layers method, he would talk about the constitution is what you're born. Mm. And he'll say you're one of five constitutions, isn't he? Sulfur, calc carb, phosphorus, silica, and I think he includes lycopodium. So he says that's your constitution. Mm. And then you've got other people that say constitutional prescribing is that totality, mental and emotional and physical symptoms, that thing. So how I see it is probably a mixture of the two. I think your constitution, look, you're born here and you're here now, and different things have happened along in your life. Like I said, it's exactly what you've said. Mm. You're born here, then trauma can happen at two, then take some medications at five for X amount of. So you've got, it really is a lack of layers, isn't it? Mm. And I think the word constitution, I don't know what the exact definition of constitution as in from a dictionary, but to me, it's something you're born with. I think about the Constitution of the United States. It's the foundation, isn't it? So it's like your body type. That's what you're born with. You're born that constitution. And then things happen and you can carry on. So say you're born a sulfur, and you get a bit of eczema stuff and stuff goes on. But then parents divorce at the age of six, you really affects you badly, become very insecure, very clingy. Then you could shift into a pulsatilla state. Mm. Okay. So now your state has shifted, hasn't it? So if that child comes to see me, I'm going to say, the weepy, the clingy, the thirstless, snotty, whatever, I'm going to prescribe pulsatilla. And to me, once you remove that pulsatilla state, because it's just a state they've gone into, you're then back to the constitution again. Mm. So to me, the constitution doesn't change. That's my personal feeling. Your constitution is what you are, but you go into different states. So again, back to the Isiaga layers model, it'd be constitution goes into a fundamental layer, and then if your pathology goes more into a lesion, he would talk about. So, but you still present, you still prescribe on what is presented to you to that state. And to me, that's the simplest form of homeopathy, what is being presented to me. Now, like you said, you're right, people could be on medication. So I think a good thing always, if somebody's on medication, say antidepressants, whatever, and they're coming in, you've got to look at all those side effects of that antidepressant and different and take it away from the case. Mm. Otherwise, you're repertorizing on drug symptoms. Mm. So that's the way I would approach it. If that answers the question, but when people, I get asked that, what's your constitutional remedy? Mm. Well, I will say, well, it might not be clear, as you said, because there's so many layers on top. But I can tell you what the remedy is presenting now is, and it's this. But as we get closer to who you are. Now, also, people can be born a remedy state. So, again, something happens in utero. There could be a little sulfur again in utero, a little phosphorus. Mm. And then, again, something happens in utero. The mother has a trauma. Something happens, and they pop out a nature mule, or they pop out of a pulsatilla or whatever. So it can also go back in utero. And then we go really push the boat out and talk about ancestral, but we won't go, let's not go down that path.
Oh, Liz.
So I don't know if that I don't know whether that makes sense.
Yeah, but, no, that's pretty much exactly what I think. I actually had a little boy this week. His dad had cancer while he was conceived. They didn't know that at the time, but 2 months into the pregnancy, they discovered the dad had cancer. And it's really interesting because this boy is just the perfect little boy, you know, pleases everybody, does whatever he's told, you know, very sensitive to what people say to him, very sensitive to reprimands. He also has this massive lipoma on his ankle. I would definitely say he is a carcinosin state, but is he carcinosin state because that is who he is, because his dad had cancer when he was conceived?
Exactly.
The thing that always throws me is when I have a child with autism and it was vaccine injury autism. So they are presenting as a child who cannot make eye contact, who doesn't like affection, who does repetitive things, hand flapping, all that. So if you didn't know anything about that person, you would say, okay, that's his constitution. But then you do a homeopathic vaccine detox and suddenly this child has eye contact, he becomes affectionate, which is a completely different... is he that, or you know, so
well again, he's in a state, isn't he? So
yeah, he's in a state,
he's in a state rather than this is his he's in a state, so it's not his foundation, is it? This is his state he's gone into. So this happens a lot, and I've had this with cases where you're taking the case and you know the parents say after a vaccination particularly he stopped speaking, you know, he that's the point where he became nonverbal. Something definitely happened after that. So now he's got into a state, hasn't he? He's deviates. Yeah. So he could have been a little phosphorus, gets his vaccine, whatever, and he goes into that state due to his susceptibility.
Yeah.
So like you said, to me, then that's a layer. The etiology has never been well since the vaccine. So therefore you could give the vaccine back in potency that removes that layer. And then they go back towards that state, whether they get there 100%, is down to their constitution. So they've got a strong constitution underneath it. This is just how I see it.
No, I agree. I'm definitely not a sepia. I'm in a sepia state since I've had a husband and kids. So I definitely wasn't. It's definitely not my constitution. Wait. This is a state.
Since your husband and the kids. Well, okay.
And the dogs and the cats.
The dogs and everything. Yeah.
And the bloody chicken who I've got to remember to go to.
You are maintaining cause, aren't you? Maintaining cause. So that's how I see it. I think it's like, it is like layers. You're just peeling back the layer. Yeah. And I don't think healing is linear, but we can use that as a model. Yeah. I think that we work backwards, don't we? We work backwards and through the case and get people. And that's why you see return of all symptoms. So, you know, you're treating somebody, say, for, I don't know, 4 migraines and there's never been well since the pill or whatever happened and you end up giving, I mean, for me, I was trying to give the indicated remedy first. Mm-hmm. So, and if that doesn't really work, then I'm thinking, is this a miasm or is this the drug? You know, what's it coming from? But if you can cover like a remedy like sepia, which will get rid of deal with the hormonal issues of taking too many hormones, then to me, you just have to follow the patient. I think we've got to get away from these preconceived models in our head. The patient or the client is our greatest guide. Their vital force is always telling us what to do and where to go next. And that, when I really got into that, and again, I've got to thank, I mean, I know I talk about Robin a lot, but he really instilled this in me to really keep it simple and to follow the vital force. He would say, you're not a homeopath, you're a vital force practitioner. Your job is just to listen to the vital force and say, what's it telling me today? That really shifted my prescribing. That really shifted my perspective of healing, because then I would just follow the patient. What's it telling me to do now? Sorry, follow the vital force. What's it telling me to do now? Because all that healing wisdom, as I always say, truly believe is within us and will always be showing us the way. So
definitely, I often have clients when they come for their follow ups. I always say to them, like, what do you want to have a chat about today? Because I know for myself when I get to appointment, on my way there, I usually have lots of things in my mind of what I want to ask the person. So whenever they walk in first, I always give them space and I say, okay, everything that you feel you need to get off your chest, get it off your chest. Any questions, anything, what happened, any questions you have. And then they'll ask a few things and 50% of them will say, and I just want to know if I should keep taking this remedy or that remedy. And I'll say to them, find all of that out at the end, because we're just taking the case and we'll see what is their main thing. And I actually had a client this week who we had our initial, and she just talked for an hour and a half, and there was so much emotion. And usually I find after the first prescription, you know, then we can, a lot of the emotions are usually gone by this time, but she's just come back for a follow-up and there was still so much emotion. And I said to her, okay, we're going to just go with whatever your vital force is telling us. At the moment, there's lots of emotions. We're just going to work through this at the moment, and we'll get to a stage where that's not so raw and at the top at the moment. But all of this is very much at the top at the moment.
Exactly. And that's back to the thing what we're just saying is that you're following the vital force. Yeah. You know, and the more that we do that, because instead of trying to change them, okay, we've talked about emotions last time, we've got to talk about, you know, and you'll see this, you know, I'm replaying this back to this master practitioner program with Hillary, because she's doing a clinic. And I think a lot of people are really quite, wow, she doesn't try to get every single thing in that hour. Yeah. She follows the patient.
Yeah.
And that's the wisdom. We follow the vital force and keep it simple. It will always tell you what to do from consultation to consultation. And even in the consultation, like you said, this lady who's just all this emotion coming out, people have great insights, don't they? In these consultations, because often the people are being heard for the first time.
She had
and that
so
space
many,
in between.
Exactly. Yeah. If you just let them come to their own conclusions, it's really interesting watching that, because we're just giving them that space to. My husband bought me a mug. It says, I don't mean to interrupt people. I just get really excited and have to tell you, or something like that, because I'm really bad at interrupting people. And my mum is a chronic like that. And whenever I chat with her, she always annoys me because she interrupts me so much. But I know that I do that too, and I'm working really hard on that. But my husband's always like, I don't know how you are so quiet in consults, because I will often not say a word. I'll say hi, and the person will talk for an hour and a half, and then I say bye. And he's like, how do you do it in your consultations, but you keep interrupting me? I'm like, I don't know. It's just a different vibe when you're in a consult.
It is, and I think you're in a different place. I mean, I think we often will drop, especially if you've done this a long time, we'll drop out of the mental sphere and we drop into our heart, I think.
Yeah.
I think we drop into a different place. And when you're in that different place, and really it's a place of connection, it's a place of being with that other person, because you can't think and listen at the same time. To truly listen, to truly be present, then I think you have to shift out of it into your heart and be present with that person, where there's no past, there's no future, it's just the present moment. And to me, it's an incredible, powerful place. And one of my favorite quotes from Rumi, beyond right thinking, beyond wrong thinking, there is a field, I'll meet you there. And to me, that's what we do in a consultation. We meet in that field, and it's neutral. And I think when you really are present with that, then people's hearts just open because they feel safe and it feels neutral and they're not going to be judged. But that's where the magic occurs, I think, sometimes. And then the remedies often can be the reminder of the conversation, reminder of the consultation with the place that you went. But I think and that comes back to us as practitioners. I think when we go into that place, and there's been lots of research on this, that what do they call it? When the brain, two brains just start to resonate at the same time. So when you drop into that space, you'll find the other person will drop into that space too, in that environment.
Very cool. It's very, I always say, I feel like I go into like almost like a bit of a meditative state where, and that's actually my, I have to say, it's my favorite consults, where I can just sit there for an hour and a half and I don't have to ask any questions. They will just go. You can just sit there and just take it all in, because I often will have like just like remedies kind of like just flowing through my head. It will just like, I don't hold on to them anymore. I used to, when I first started out, you get that remedy and you'd be like, okay, I have to pace into this remedy. Yeah. But after a while, they just kind of, you know, just kind of go. It's like in meditation, just kind of.
But that's exactly it. It's like you're saying, it's about it's the simplicity of it, and it's allowing the flow of what of that wisdom, of that healing wisdom, to come to the surface. And for us, and I know exactly what you're saying, because I remember when you, it's almost like you zone out. And I remember when this first happened to me in practice, and I was thinking, oh my God, I'm not concentrating. You know, I had to snap back in. But actually, what you're doing is disengaging the mind. Mm-hmm. And you're engaging in another part, often, I think, very heart-centered, and where you're at a different, you're in a different space. And that's when you get clarity. Mm-hmm. I mean, one thing that really helped me really develop this was, and I know you've had Ian on, haven't you, Ian Watson?
Yeah.
Was the three principles and mm-hmm. Sydney Banks. Did he talk about the principles?
He did. And also, I was going to say to you, we should get into Bali and maybe do, I don't know how long his workshop yes. takes, but we should get Absolutely. Into a three principles workshop as part of the Bali 2024.
Definitely. And I would say to yeah. anybody, look into the three principles, and you can go onto YouTube, check out Sydney Banks, some of the very short videos. But that really shifted me as a practitioner when I discovered that Sydney Banks and the three principles. And it's something you can't get intellectually, so it's something that just comes of itself. It's about insights. And again, it can happen in the consultation where you'll get an insight, won't you? You'll say something and the person goes, that's exactly how it is.
Yeah.
And you go, okay. You know, because it's just come up. It's just come up of itself. So they always say an insight, you can't force an insight. An insight is a gift to be given. And I think that's very true. It's very true.
That's really beautiful.
Going deep here, Eugenia. We're going deep. Deep. Down on the chin wag.
I still want to talk a bit about aggravations too, but actually something I've started doing, because I think so few people are actually connected with their intuition. So something that I've kind of started a little bit, and it's a little bit of Angelica Lemke and Sarah Valentini's way that they do things. And I'll get a client to just have their feet on the ground. I do it whether it's via Zoom or whether they're in the clinic with me, feet on the ground, hands on the lap, relaxing the shoulders, getting to close their eyes and take a few deep breaths. And I say to them, because often they're like, what the hell's going on? So I'll just say to them, look, this is only going to be 5 minutes, nothing more than 5 minutes, so that they have a time frame. Because when somebody did it to me, they didn't say how long it was going to be, and I felt myself being a little bit uncomfortable. So I'll say to them, only going to be 5 minutes. I want you to trust your intuition. You have your guides or your gods or whoever it is that you believe in, your higher self is right here with you in the consultation right now. And I'm going to ask you something, and I want you to, the first picture or word or feeling that pops into your mind when I read this back out to you, I want you to trust that first picture or word that comes up. Don't second guess it. Whatever the first thing is, just say it to me. And I'll get them to take a few nice deep breaths. And then I'll read. So they might have talked to me about a traumatic event that's happened. And because I type 60 words a minute, it's all verbatim. So then what I do is, while they're in that state, I read those words back to them. And I say, what's the first word or picture that pops into your mind or feeling when I read these words to you? And that's really cool. And often, I guess it's like a little bit of sensation method, a little bit of Sarah Valentini, a little bit of Angelica Lemke, a little bit of all combined to get to that feeling. And that's often where they'll use that beautiful descriptive language where they say, you know, I see myself this or that, or I feel beaten, I feel caged, I feel whatever. And that's, you know, you can kind of get a bit more to the source. So that's something I like.
Well, I think, and that's the thing about practice, I think, you know, especially when we're first starting out, we don't know how to be as a practitioner, really, do we? We get in bits. But I think really your practice should be, is an external manifestation of you and who you are and how you work. And I think we can be very creative around it. And I think, you know, we have to bring things in that we feel comfortable with, that, because all we're doing is like I say, we're creating the space, aren't we? The space in between. But as you said, I think it's always important, as we said in the last chinwag, that we always set our stall out. So people, there's no surprises for people. Like you said, you say how long this is going to be for, you explain it. And yeah, I think it's, I also think thoughts come into my mind. What I do often when my client comes, especially if they come face to face to see me here in my clinic, then I'll put them in the room and then I'll go and ask them if they want a drink. And I do that on purpose to allow them. I can leave them in there for five minutes. I want to get a drink. Just relax, just take it. So they've got that time just to connect with them. So I don't say that to them, but that's what's happening. So I make it very clear. And you find when they come back in again, I make sure I don't burst in the door. But often people have settled, especially if they've traveled or they're just settled and they sort of are connected to the space.
That's really nice. I like that idea.
So it's just a very simple way. And I, you know, I think it's, I think it works. I think it works. Slightly different on Zoom. You can't really do that. Go and make him a cup of tea and come back. You make yourself a cup of tea. I'll be back in a minute.
Is there anything else that you do in your, like, I really like that piece of advice. Is there anything else that you do in your clinic room? Do you use any essential oils? Like, I know there's differing thoughts on that. No. Or do you have anything else in your space that, that you find is helpful?
No, I mean, I don't. The only thing I do is, it's now remembering what you do, because you do it automatically. But I know each patient, whether it's on Zoom, whether it's on in person, I always, not with them before they arrive, just really close my eyes, just to connect and say, how can I serve this person to my highest good? How can I serve them? And so I feel I want to connect in that way and be of service to them. But actually, you know, within my practice, and then once the patient comes, it's a very, I think if you could zoom into my consultations, it's like you're thinking this up, we're just having a chat.
Yeah.
But I've learned over the years of, and even my page of notes will be, so my notes will be a page, really, points. It's not, as I used to be doing 20 pages of notes, but that comes with practice, that comes with experience, because you know what to write down, you know the important point. But I really try to honor that sacred, I call it, it is a sacred space of the consultation, and go with the flow, but also being aware that there's a beginning, a middle, and an end to a consultation, and try to pace it in that way as well, or direct it as softly as possible. So when we come to the end, the person's not left somewhere, you know, that it's actually been a, there's been a, like, I always think of it like a song, you know, it's like you're getting back to a place ready to leave. So I think it's more how I am than anything else. I used to do all sorts of stuff. I used to spray stuff in the room after each client, and, you know, what I mean by that is like flower essences and different things. And
space clearing.
Yeah, space clear. Open the windows. And kids, you know, when people have brought the kids and changed a nappy in the room, you know. And then the next patient thinks it's you.
I have done a consultation. Funny places I've done consultations. I have done it in the car when a client's turned up and the baby's fast asleep and she didn't want to come in. So I took my laptop into her car and we did the consultation. I have done a consultation in the toilet because we have got quite a big bathroom, and the, like, you know, 3-year-old wanted to use the toilet and it was a big one. So I didn't have much time because they were late already. And so I just took my laptop in there. I'm like, we'll just do the consult here. So.
No, it's great because it's about being adaptable, isn't it? Look at health. Health is our ability to adapt to our environment. So we should be able to do it anytime, any place, anywhere. Take a case, you know, it doesn't have to be always the perfect place, but it's that. Yeah, I totally agree with that. You've got to be able to adjust wherever you are.
Yeah, that pacing definitely comes with time, though. I found that at the start, it was really hard for me to, you know, consultations would just go on for like half an hour over time because. Well, for one, I didn't have the confidence to say, okay, all that space. I didn't have the boundary to say, okay, we need to finish up now. But you also, like, I find by about 15 minutes before the end, I have to like start wrapping up because I take a lot of time in explaining, you know, how to take the remedies, what they might expect, all that sort of stuff, which actually kind of leads us into the next thing I was going to ask you. But I just quickly want to ask you, timing wise, how are you going for time? Do you want to?
I've got 4 minutes. I've only got I've got a consultation
then,
as well.
No, then we'll wrap it up because I'll go into aggravations next time. Is there any final message you wanna leave our listeners with, or any final thing you want to say before we wrap up?
Yeah, I think I really think that what we were talking about the space in between. I think that's an important part of what we do as practitioners. It's not always about the remedy. I think the remedy is important, obviously, but it's also the consultation, whether that's an acute and it's a 15-minute consultation or it's an hour initial consultation or however you practice. I think it's the most important thing is always our connection and being present, because I think people feel that presence. And it's very rare in society now that we get people's total presence in an interaction. And so I've seen a lot of homeopaths that where they'll be on the computer as in the consultation, not even looking up to the patient. To me, you should be there with them. Like I said, if it's an acute, if it's a chronic, doesn't matter, that we are present and we are with them. As I said, we can't listen and think at the same time. And I'll just go back to that poem by Rumi. You know, beyond right thinking, beyond wrong thinking, there is a field. I'll meet you there.
Well, so I'll meet you next week.
I'll be there.
Whenever we're having our next chin wag.
Yeah.
Thank you so much for today, Marcus.
Thank you, Jeannie. Thank you. Take care.
See ya.
Bye-bye.